What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the Shry Guy, Kotaku's own Jason Schreier.
It is. Hello, Greg. It is good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I can't believe we finally got you.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
You got to come to New York.
And
you can have me all you want.
Yeah. You're like, there, I'm totally in. No, there's no demand for me there.
No, not at all.
Jason Schreier, if somebody didn't know you, how do you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as a prolific Twitter user.
Okay.
And I am the news editor at Kotaku.com, which is a website about TV shows and snacks and anime and occasionally video games.
Occasionally video games, sure.
I'm also the author of Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, which is out in stores now at your local bookstore.
Go pick it up.
A book about how hard it is to make video games. And I am a co-host of Kotaku Split Screen, which is a podcast that people who like Kinda Funny will definitely like.
I bet. I know they will.
Yes.
Here's the thing, is that this is your first appearance on Kinda Funny Games Daily.
It is.
However, your name read on this show nearly every day.
That's pretty funny, but I'll take it.
How are you so good at what you do? You are the guy who's breaking the news all the time. You have all the scoops. You're getting on different sources. You're not like, how does this happen? How did we become the guy in the game?
I think it's because I have no shame, so I'm willing to bother people over again until they tell me what I want to know.
Sure. Sometimes they eventually break.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just annoyingly persistent. That's what I tell people when they're like, how do I get into journalism? I'm always just like, be annoyingly persistent.
Yeah. People will respect you. They won't like you, but they'll respect you and eventually give you the information
you
want.
That's all you need. You know what? I think if everybody likes you, then you're not a journalist. You're not doing your job as
a
journalist.
That's a great point. Yeah. So how did it all start for you?
Off.
How did you get on this track?
Of journalism.
Oh, yeah, I would say you and Klepek are like the names of people who I think are actually like, and there's Eurogamer people too, but for us Americans who are out there like actually beating down doors.
There are a fair number of people doing good work, some people that people don't know. Megan Faruqo-Mesh
of The Verge
just published a great story about Telltale's working conditions, which is one of those stories that everybody has heard buzz about, but nobody has done like a proper story until now. I think there are a lot of people doing good work. As for my story, a bridge version is I always wanted to be a journalist, always wanted to be a writer of some sort. After college, I was freelancing for a while. I was actually covering local news stories for like local newspapers and websites and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I remember I would go to like government zoning board meetings, and you do not know boring until you have tried to cover a local zoning board meeting.
Yeah.
And at some point I was like, I want to do this, but I want to write about something more interesting. And I eventually decided like, hey, why don't I try writing about video games?
Sure.
Eventually I started freelancing a bunch, got a job at Wired.com.
Okay.
For Chris Kohler, who now works with me at Kotaku, hilariously, was working with him for a while. Eventually in like 2012, so 6 years ago, got an email from Steven Totillo, who was like, hey, we should talk about an opportunity. And then he was like, come to Kotaku. And I was like, okay. And I've been there ever since.
Well, you're doing great work. We're going to talk about some of it here in the front.
I appreciate that.
First, the spiel. If you didn't know, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every week down a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news that you need to know about. To be part of the show, you need to write in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Give us questions, comments, bad PSN names, and everything else under the video game sun. Then watch us record the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you want to be part of the show there, we need your help. You need to keep us honest. Go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening later on podcast services around the globe, including Spotify. Housekeeping for you. We're sponsored by Brooklyn and Hymns, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 6 items on the Roper Report. Thank you, Cool Greg. Number one, it's time for game developers to unionize. This is your story from Kotaku.
Solidarity.
I want to read you the first couple graphs here and then talk about it. In a small room yesterday inside the massive Moscone Center meeting complex, roughly 200 people crowded around a large table to conduct a challenging conversation about working in the video games industry. The video game industry. You're right here. I don't want to put an S on your words and get you mad at me. There was a single microphone, chauffeured from person to person by a sprinting staffer working the game developers conference, which is running in town all week. Most people began talking before the mic got to them. Raucous banging, presumably from construction nearby, drowned out many attendees' comments. Despite the din, the buzz in the room was apparent. People were ready for change. I have a stat here then from later on in your thing. Across the video game industry, there's a widespread interest in organization. A 2014 IGDA survey found 56% of the 220 polled developers would be in favor of unionizing.
2,200.
Oh, my apologies. Right there. Thanks for fact checking as we go. There you go. A little bit bigger.
Yes.
What is going on, Jason?
So, as we know, as I'm sure you guys have discussed several times, there are, in the video game industry, there are, to put it kindly, not great working conditions at a lot of places. Telltale, we just mentioned. There is brutal crunch at a lot of video game studios. I would say that a lot of people believe that you can't make games without crunching, without putting in extra hours, without working nights and weekends. And there's actually an assumption or a misconception from some people that crunch is only what you do at the end of the project. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the last few weeks we're crunching to get God of War out or whatever. But actually, crunch happens all the time. It happens before milestones throughout the project. So crunch is very prevalent in the video game industry. Layoffs happening all the time. Last year, we saw EA shut down Visceral. Yep. A couple of months ago, Hangar 13 right here in the Bay Area got half of their staff got laid off. So this is just constantly happening. I think that video game workers, unlike, say, film workers, are not protected at all. They don't have any sort of leverage against the people who manage them and who can control their fates. In the film, they have unions. In the video game industry, they do not. And it's something that's been discussed a lot, this idea that workers should be uniting to bargain collectively and try to get some leverage in that fight. And I think now, at this GDC, this topic has more momentum than it's ever had.
Yeah.
There's a group called Game Workers Unite that's passing around pamphlets and buttons and zines, which is really cool to see. They had a Twitter account that like leaped immediately. I think it's like 4,000 followers now. So this is something that is very real and is happening, and people are talking about it. And I feel pretty strongly about this as someone who works for a company that unionized.
Right.
And
that was a big deal.
Saved our asses.
Yeah.
Because when we were bought by Univision in the wake of the whole Hogan mess that I won't get into now, look it up. when we were bought by Univision, they had to maintain our union contract. And so they couldn't change our benefits. They couldn't change our salaries. They couldn't change the fact that we have a minimum salary floor. For example, because of our union contract, every single editorial employee at our company will make a minimum of $50,000 a year, which is more than I know a lot of people at IGN or GameSpot are like entry-level salaries there are much lower than
when that. When I started at IGN, I did not make $50,000 a year.
Exactly. And so like having those protections in place, I mean, I think IGN should unionize. I've told people there that like, hey, if you need help, I'm your man.
Sure. Yeah, I think I saw that go up after one of their recent, like maybe after Steve Butz left or something of that effect.
Yeah, I've been telling people privately as well. But yeah, I think it's something that would really benefit game developers. And there are a lot of
logistical challenges. So why hasn't it happened? Yeah, I think Christian Phillips and I were talking yesterday. It came up briefly. Mm-hmm. And I think the theory is just why it's too fractured in a way that there's so many different developers.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what unionizing is, and a lot of people think of it as like, okay, well, so the voice actors are all unionized, so now we have to have like an artist union, a writer's union, a engineer's union, or whatever.
Sure.
And that's one way to do it, but that is a logistical impossibility because of the number of different locations people are in. They can't all communicate because of the sheer number of people that are in each discipline. That to me seems much less feasible than individual companies deciding to unionize.
Okay.
So for example, if Naughty Dog decided, hey, you know what? We want to take a union vote. We want to see if we can unionize. And 51% of their employees voted yes to unionization. Then they at Naughty Dog, within Naughty Dog, could bargain their own contract and negotiate with their managers to say, hey, this is what we want. Maybe if you're at Naughty Dog, you are probably crunching a lot because that's a studio that has a great deal of crunch. Maybe you're okay with that because that's how you make Game of the Year, but you want to fight for paid overtime. So
sure.
Like you're willing to work 60-hour weeks, but you want to be paid for that extra time. Or maybe you want to have salary floors or whatever else. And the reason that that works so well is because each workforce can decide on their own what works best for them. What works best at Naughty Dog is going to be different than what works best at Ubisoft.
Sure.
Or what works best at Insomniac or whatever. And I think making it based on the studio can be very effective. We have to see one studio lead the charge, and that'll be like the first domino, and then the rest will start falling. But I think that is the most practical way to make it happen.
Connor writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD just like you can and says, hey, Greg and Jason, given all the recent talk about unionization in the games industry this week, do you think that unionizing is a real possibility given the historical resistance to this kind of organization? Jason, I've been fascinated by the two articles you've written this week about union efforts at GDC. Keep up the great work. Stay excellent, Connor. Is this really going to happen? Do you think we're there at the tipping point?
I think so. I think it can definitely happen. I think the most important thing is, like I said before, clearing up misconceptions. Like, when we were unionizing at my company, at first, I didn't know much about unions. Yeah. And I was like, man, all I've read or seen online or whatever is, like, unions are bureaucratic and rigid. And, like, I heard a story the other night here, actually, about how, like, on film sets, if the cable guy is gone and you need to move the cable to adjust the camera, you can't move the cable because union regulations say he can move the cable. And there's just all sorts of bureaucratic nonsense. And then as we were doing it, it became the type of thing, or I became more like aware of what unionizing actually is and what you can actually do. And you don't have to create those kind of rigid requirements. Like at a lot of studios, I imagine setting up something that is like, we all can only work a maximum of 45 hours a week or whatever. Like that would be impractical, I think, because people just have not historically made games that way, as idealistic as that might be. But I think it would be a lot more realistic to be like, hey, we know that the people, the executives in charge of the publishers are making millions of dollars a year to off of our labor, and we think that at the very least we should be paid for our overtime, or at the very least we should have salary floors so that no matter what, like no matter how good a salary negotiator you are, you will still make the same amount, a fair wage. Fairness, transparency, these are all things, and like you can, because it's a union is collective bargaining, it's you as a workforce deciding, we are going to do this, we're going to go in this direction, you can go in whatever direction you want, you don't have to.
You can make your own rules, you don't have to have it be the cable guy, the terrible examples of stuff.
So like at our union, we decided not to fight for just cause, which is the idea that protections for being fired, and like that people can't be fired without just cause, and then you get into all sorts of complication rules and regulations there, because we were like, no, we want our sites to be free to hire and fire whoever they want,
sure,
because we want that kind of flexibility. But we decided we did want to fight for salary floors, and that's a big one. That's one that I think can be really helpful for people.
So then does it just need to have someone at a studio be super motivated to actually make this happen?
Yeah, it needs to be a few people. And it starts with people just having private conversations, getting educated. Eventually, people, once words start spreading. So legally, at least in the U.S., an employer cannot fire you or punish you for talking about unionization. It is still something that happens. So if you are a game developer at a studio and you're thinking about unionization, you might want to keep it on the DL, at least for now, until you see like what people are saying. But there are all sorts of ways you can start talking about it. Facebook groups, Slack channels, Discord, whatever, private one-on-one conversations. And yeah, once you start gauging interest and seeing what people think and talking about it more and more, then eventually you get to the point where you're like, okay, we want to force a vote, we want to get recognition. And there's a whole process. I'm not like a union I'm not a labor leader, so
you're not like thrown open a briefcase and all these like materials pop out like, hey, let me show you how to do this, and this is what I would do.
I wish
I've come up with a plan for you, Naughty Dog, here's how I think of it.
So I think the best way is to find union leaders within your respective communities and talk to them and get advice from them and get help on the whole process from them. But yeah, but it's totally feasible. It just like starts with one studio, and then once one studio, I would love to see a studio like Naughty Dog do it, because if you're a studio with enough cachet and you're powerful enough that you can't really be punished because the people in charge need you, then it starts there, and then other people get inspired. And like with us, it was like we did it, and then Vox Media did it, and Vice did it, and Salon did it, and all these other media outlets were like, whoa, because all it takes is one domino, and then bam, like everyone gets into it. So yeah, I'm optimistic.
CP writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can, and says, dear Greg, and welcome, Jason. I enjoyed yesterday's episode an awful lot. Greg, you mentioned that the video game development industry isn't particularly unionized. Then he goes on to talk a little bit about this. Can we reflect? And then he asks, do you think this would be good for the industry? Jason especially seems to spend an awful lot of time talking recently redundant developers to get those sweet inside scoops. Do you think strong union would help keep those people in work?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It depends what you want your union to do. Like, I don't think it's practical to be like, we want our contract to prevent us from being laid off at all. But you might say, hey, we want a fair and good severance package, which a lot of studios have already. So you might even say, like, we want to lock in the severance package we already have so that in case of, like, financial disaster, we still get our rights.
Or somebody else buys them out, right?
Exactly.
And then it suddenly changes.
And suddenly, suddenly a wrestler decides to come destroy your company, and yeah.
You let me tell you, brother.
Yes. Oh my God. Don't get me started.
I won't. I'm sorry. I'll stop right there. For you, is this the biggest story for you coming out of GDC right now? Mm-hmm. Is this the undercurrent you're seeing?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. It's something that I've just been having conversations with lots of people about, just hearing people talking about it, seeing on Twitter, everybody's talking about unionization. Yeah, and which is a really good thing, because the more people are talking about it, the more momentum it'll gain and the less likely it is to just die in the discussion phase. So I would love to see that momentum carried on after GDC. And yeah, I think it can be really useful.
Do you see there being a downside to it, or a downside for the consumer? I mean, would anything change for somebody watching or listening if this was to happen?
I don't know. It depends. I mean, the anti-union argument, there are a lot of anti-union arguments. One of them is that is always to try to drive a wedge between the worker and the consumer, to say that, like, if the worker costs more, then those costs will be passed down to the consumer. But realistically, just looking at what game publishers are doing now, they're already trying to pass every single possible cost to the consumer. It's like you think that if Activision could get away with charging you $400 for a game, don't you think they would be doing that anyway? Like,
sure.
They're only going to do what they can get away with doing. We saw with Battlefront 2 what happens when loot boxes go too far,
yeah,
and when people just have an outrage. You think that's going to stop just because of unions? Like, unions are not going to, like, I just don't see that feasibly happening, because consumers are not going to be okay with paying more. Like, that's not going to change anything.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to run through my head, right? I think you can pass the cost on in terms of, like, now it's all right, standard retail is 70, 75, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think it would, if anything, just open people's eyes, maybe. If, mm-hmm. Okay, your games, the game cycle is taking longer because people are only working this many hours. Well, that's a good thing, right? Like, I hate, it's such a weird back channel thing of like, man, I'm playing this game and I've loved it, but I know that people were up till 3 in the morning screaming at each other. Like, it's art, right? And man, so I think we need to respect the artists. And if that was at the forefront of the conversation, to the person who's just grabbing off the shelf at Walmart, right, would they even know if it was now in a 3-year cycle for a game rather than 2?
It's the other thing is that, but as I mentioned in the article that I published this morning,
required reading, everybody. Kotaku, go hit it up.
Bobby Kotick in 2016 made $33 million.
Yeah.
If you have let's say a game developer is making a good salary, $100,000 a year, that would be 330 developers would be the equivalent of Bobby Kotick's salary.
Yeah.
So instead of taking money and passing these costs down to the consumer, maybe Bobby doesn't have to make $33 million. Maybe he can make $10 million.
Yeah, right.
That seems like a fair. What do you even do with all those extra millions? You need more jets?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never had a million, so I don't know what you do with any of the millions.
It's a conversation to be had, and for some reason, we all just accept the fact that, like, well, you know what? Executives are going to make whatever
CEOs
they want.
CEOs are CEOs. That's
and
how it is.
That's where the conversation needs to start, instead of being like, how do the costs, why? What if the costs pass down to the consumers? Well, what if the costs go up to the executives?
Do you think what we've seen with independent development and the success people can have there, and you can see a, you know, group go from a garage to a studio to everything else, mm-hmm. is that part of the solution, in the way that those people hopefully don't lose sight of the fact of, well, these guys are doing all the work. I might be CEO now, but I was down in those trenches and I know what this is all about.
Mm, a solution for
what we're seeing. I mean, in terms of a monetary imbalance of a CEO at an Activision doing this, which is somebody who's getting bought out. This is happening. You figure there's corporate ladder climbing there.
Yeah.
There's people who you bring in, like, you know, technically on paper, I'm the CEO of Kinda Funny.
Yeah.
That means jack shit.
Yeah.
One day, if Kinda Funny continues to grow, I'm sure we'll have to bring in a real CEO who knows what the fuck. I don't even know that role does. You know what I mean?
You're not getting a $30 million bonus.
I do not get a $30 million bonus at the moment right now. Sometimes Joey orders pizza for the entire place, and that's pretty great.
Okay. Indie studios are a different world entirely, because oftentimes they are just beholden to other types of monetary interests, whether it be publishers or investors or whatever else. So there's always going to be that dynamic between the developers and the people paying for them. But yeah, I mean, it's been cool to see the flush of indies over the past decade, and like the ability of indie developers to just sustainably make their own games not have to worry about executives and shareholders and all that jazz. Yeah, it's really cool.
So outside of this, then you got your finger on the pulse. What is the big story that people are ignoring right now? What do you think is the big story that you think is happening in video games?
Labor is something that people don't think about a lot.
Yeah.
Big story in games. I think that games as a service is the biggest story right now, but people aren't ignoring them. People are
for sure.
Aware
we see
that
all the time.
Just the idea that a game is a $60 product, and that you just buy it once and stop playing it after a week and go return it to GameStop. Like, that model is, if not dead, then dying pretty rapidly.
Yeah, it's on life support, right?
It is very much on life support. And I think that's been the biggest shift in the way games are made over the past few years, which I think is very interesting. May or may not be something that I'm writing in depth on at the moment. Hint, hint. I think that's the biggest story in games outside of labor, is just that evolution and the way that games are so unique in that you can keep updating a game long after it comes out. And when people think of games as a service, I think they think of the destiny of the destinies and the divisions of the world. But a game as a service can be a lot of different things, which I think is really interesting.
What are some of the examples?
Well, like Final Fantasy 15 is a game as a service. It's a single player game, but it's been transformed over the past year into something entirely different. All the DLC and updates and all the shit they've added, it's crazy.
Do you think, are we moving towards a place where we're talking about like the $60 play it in a week, be done with the game is going away.
Yeah.
Are we also going, we're coming up on this Fortnite versus PUBG story, right?
Oh yeah.
And this, let's just jump there and then we can frame it all around there.
Sure.
We're jumping ahead to number 4 on the Roper Report. We'll be back for 2 and 3. Don't worry about it. It's Fortnite versus PUBG via IGN. Last month, Fortnite's revenue topped that of its battle royale rival PUBG, earning $126 million, an impressive feat considering it's a free-to-play game and all that money came from in-app purchases. By comparison, PUBG brought in $103 million, with most of that being attributed to the one-off purchase of the game itself, reports The Verge. While PUBG does offer in-app purchases, Bluehole hasn't mechanized the model as much as Epic, which rolls out new skins and emotes with each new season, as well as event-specific items like the recent Spring It On with its St. Patrick's Day themed hero and rewards. Is this something everybody's got to wrap their head around too? The fact that Fortnite and the Fortnite players are refreshing that store every 24 hours because they want to know what's going up there. Whereas I'm a big Friday the 13th fan. I buy Friday the 13th. When they drop DLC, I buy it. Uh-huh. But I'm not frantically refreshing, and I got to imagine that cost is paid off to them of like, well, we're not making money off the guy who already bought the thing and waits for the DLC.
Yeah, I think every single video game company on the planet is looking at Fortnite right now and saying, how do we do this? That story is interesting. The Fortnite versus PUBG is so interesting because the story of just PUBG coming out, Fortnite having been in development for all these years, Fortnite coming out and nobody caring or noticing, suddenly Fortnite releasing the free battle royale mode last fall and
unabashedly being like, hey, we love PUBG, so we're doing our own
thing. And then PUBG like sending out a nasty press release that's like, these guys copied us. And also the fact that PUBG is on the Unreal Engine, which is the technology that drives the game, and Fortnite is made by Epic, the people who make Unreal. So when it comes to Unreal, the best engineers on the planet are at Epic. So PUBG, as we know, I'm sure you played it, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's super janky.
Oh, yeah.
And Fortnite is not. Fortnite is a very clean, smooth game. Not that that matters for breaking into the mainstream, as we saw with Pokemon Go, but but the comparisons are very interesting. There's really interesting stories there. As far as monetization, everybody in the industry is looking at Battlefront 2, is looking at Fortnite, is looking at Destiny 2, is saying, what do these guys do right and wrong, and how can we copy that?
Yes.
The video game industry is very, very dependent on cloning and copying ideas.
Sure.
There's nothing original, ever.
That's why I love the cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, man, PUBG started to hit, so guess what? In about a year and a half, 2 years, every game will have that, because that's what everybody's been working
this
on now.
That's another story that here at GDC. It's like, well, gonna see some Battle Royale games later this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Gonna see some Battle Royale games next year. Yeah, that is definitely going to happen. It's just like MOBAs and MMOs before that, and it's just a constant cycle.
Well, remember like when we'd be at IGN and we'd go see previews in like 2008 or whatever, and when RPG mechanics started, it's RPG, every fucking game's like that now. You don't even say that. Of course there's a skill tree and I'm investing points the way I want to.
Yes, of course. It's just part of, and now every game is an open world game. And
of course.
Yeah, it's, everyone's just taking from everybody else.
Real quick too, for this Fortnite v PUBG, GameSpot chimes in with a different one. It says PUBG Mobile has already reached number one on both Google Play and the App Store, dethroning the mobile version of Fortnite Battle Royale, which was previously sitting at number one on the latter's free apps charts. That's an impressive debut considering the game launched by surprise earlier this week following a few rounds of beta tests restricted to Canada. Unlike the mobile version of Fortnite, PUBG Mobile is available to all players with an iOS or Android device, which has undoubtedly played a part in its quick ascent to the top of the charts. Currently, only select iOS users have access to Fortnite as well, as players have to sign up for the chance to take part in the invite-only test. It also helps that PUBG Mobile can be downloaded for free, unlike the PC or Xbox One versions, both of which must be purchased.
Aren't the charts based on momentum? I feel like this is a non-story because at least the podcast store, which is what I pay the most attention to, it's not based on downloads.
It's based
on the number of subscriptions, like velocity of subscriptions. So, of course, PUBG is going to get to number one when it comes out. It's the question is what happens after a while once they both leveled off.
100%.
PUBG is going to get the most downloads the day it comes out.
Yeah.
So this doesn't really mean anything.
No, of course not. But it's interesting to see them go back and forth, right? But that's the whole thing, especially for the podcast, whenever it's like, who the hell knows how that's...
Yeah, exactly. But it's like velocity of subscribers. So
it's just also interesting for me how PUBG Mobile handled all this. Because it was that we were on the show and we mentioned it and somebody in your wrong was like, it just dropped. It came in like, what? Really? Yeah. Like, wow. And it's like, you have to imagine such a kick in the ass because Fortnite comes out and is getting all these headlines and they want to get out there and race it. And here's another shot at
it.
Here. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Here's my next question for you.
Yes, please.
How do you feel about me reading your stories on the show? I don't know how. I know you're a busy man. You don't watch it the whole show, or I'm sure.
I've seen a few.
We don't read them verbatim. We call out, hey, this is the headline. Here's the key information. Go read and stuff like that. I've always wondered.
Well, I like you guys.
Yeah.
So I'm totally cool with it. There's some YouTube shows that they read the entire thing. They summarize the entire thing. They don't give a lot of credit. They are a lot more dickish.
Oh, really? Dicks on the internet?
And I won't name names.
Okay.
But there's a certain YouTube channel that reads a lot of our stories, especially a lot of our scoops, and just has two people looking in the camera and reading everything off a piece of paper and just like no credit whatsoever except like mentioning the word Kotaku once at the beginning.
Yeah.
That bothers me because I put in a lot of hours into a lot of the work that we do. All of our team does. And to see people on YouTube spend 10 minutes just reading it and like getting 100,000 views off of that, it can drive me a little crazy.
Okay.
I like it when you guys do that.
Good.
You guys give proper credit.
Well, that was,
you guys are cool about
for
it.
For us, with our lineage and who we are, you know what I mean, of coming from IGN and doing this for so long, like when we
know
did,
what it's at.
When we did this, it was very much I wanted to pay it forward because I remember at IGN, not an argument by any means, but I remember having a conversation with Andy McNamara on over Twitter when I didn't even know Andy.
Yeah.
And it was that, you know, Game Informer had the reveal cover story of whatever, and IGN did a news story about it where IGN credited it. I think I read the IGN news story about it. And obviously we say Game Informer's cover, this, that, and the other. But for the thumbnail, we used the image from the cover and did there, and Andy was mad that Game Informer, and this I'm rusty on this, but something to the fact that the Game Informer logo wasn't in the thumbnail. And I was like, but we're talking in this, and it was just this interesting thing of like, well, I never thought about it that way. You know what I mean? Like when IGN would do something or somebody would mention my review, it's like, oh, that's cool. But and then to do this new show, I wanted to make sure we were doing it the right way where it was, hey, here's where it's coming from. You should go read it. And even I try to do it where, you know, by way of, if it is IGN or GameSpot who's talking about an article that I can't get or they've translated or whatever, that it initially came from here and this is where we're getting to.
I think what you guys also do is you always add context and your own thoughts, which I think some YouTube channels I've seen, some certain YouTube channels don't actually do that. They literally are just reading the article and it's like a 7-minute video that's like, here, we are going to paraphrase and read every single line in this Kotaku story, and I might have written like a 2,500 word story and they're literally just summarizing it and not saying anything else. So that's quite literally just stealing our stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, we're going to read a few excerpts, give you guys credit, and then analyze it and talk about it a little bit, which is what you guys do, which I appreciate a lot more.
Okay, good. Just making sure.
Yeah, of course.
Doubling back in a weird way, let's go to number two on the Roper Report. God of War has gone gold. Corey Barlog said this on Twitter. God of War is gold, baby. Thank you to every wonderful human who worked so hard to make this happen. Neither word nor emoji can express the love I have for all of you. Next stop, April 20th. Also, there was an article going around today in a couple different places that Corey had pitched the whole no camera, one shot thing when he was at Crystal Dynamics for the Tomb Raider reboot, and they laughed him out of the room. They said, no way. Now, you had an interesting take on this headline, God of War gold.
I did. Well, going gold doesn't mean anything. Maybe it did back in the ancient days when you always had to print to disk and you would literally have a gold manufacturing disk, which is where it comes from. And then you were all done. But now you are never done with a game. You go gold, like you ship your to cert or whatever, you get your master disk, but you are still working on the day one patch. You are still working on the DLC. You are still working on the updates that are coming in the game. There's no such thing as going gold anymore. Or maybe there is internally at studios, but it just doesn't mean anything to us anymore.
Yeah. It ever is just a heads up. And in a it's a heads up. It's a bit of marketing, but I like it more as a developer. Hey guys, we just accomplished something. This is the version of the game that's going to get printed and put on a disc. Yeah. yes, the next 3 weeks are going to be bug squashes and D1 fixes and all these things. But
I think people interpret it, from what I've seen on like Reset Era, people interpret it as like, oh my God, thank God it can't be delayed anymore. Because I saw that with like Ni No Kuni too. People were like, it was like, oh, it went gold. And people were like, oh, thank God, like no more delays. Can't be delayed another 2 months. So that's funny. But yeah, God of War, I'm excited to play that thing.
Did you do any of the preview stuff?
Nope.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's so good. Yeah, very excited. Very excited for it as well. Corey Barlog coming through today, doing an interview for the Kind of Funny Gamescast.
Talk to him about Suit Coden 2, my favorite game of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, Jared Petty's out there.
Yeah, huge fan. Yeah.
Suit Coden 2, that's how I say it.
Yes.
Number three, this is a super short one for you. CD Projekt Red is talking about the success they found by the end of... Hey, Jared, you poked your head in.
I thought I heard you call my name.
He loves
you heard Suit Coden.
Oh!
Look at him go. There he goes. He loves it too.
That's true.
Okay. CD Projekt Red put out this. By the end of 2017, that is, throughout the 10-year period following the release of the first game in the series, over 33 million copies of The Witcher games have been sold worldwide.
Impressive.
Very impressive.
And I think that's mostly The Witcher 3. Like, I think that means 100%. Witcher 3 is at, like, 20 million, 25 million, something like that.
Yeah. Well, that's another game, right, that in another company that's done it so well in terms of, hey, here's free DLC. Here's a thank you letter from us in the thing.
Yeah.
Here's all this other stuff, and we're going to give you, and then, you know, Blood and Wine, right? Hey, this is like pretty much could have been another game, but here it is.
So, yeah, their success is impressive. One of the things that people don't talk about often is how much pressure the developers there must feel to recreate that, because when you create a game that is that transcendent and that game-changing for the industry, suddenly your next game has to be that good. I am willing to bet that that is the main reason that Cyberpunk has taken so long, is because they are so pressured to make something that is as good as The Witcher 3 or better.
Yeah, and all eyes are on them now. Now they have millions of players who did not play the other ones, who know that this is a great thing. What are we going to do with
it? It's I can't even imagine.
Nicholas Scarpino from kindoffunny.com, are you okay?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, I just...
Oh my God.
I was just looking for this, I don't know.
Jason, he won the world championship in the most recent party mode.
You did it.
It climbs away from me.
Yeah, you got to show it up.
I'll go ahead and put it where it belongs.
Thanks, Nick. Thank you. Thanks. Number five.
Okay.
Number five on the Rope Report. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Remastered apparently won't have multiplayer. This is via Charlie Intel. Rumors started swirling this past week about a possible Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Remastered that could be incoming in the near future. The first rumors started after a listing appeared on Amazon Italy last week, with support channels for some large retailers following up with possible additional pre-order details. However, Charlie Intel has learned new information about Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Remastered from a source that sent us materials from a Raven Software employee. The information states Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Remastered does not have a multiplayer mode. It is a campaign-only remaster, according to the material Charlie Intel was sent. We believe this information to be accurate. They updated their story to Eurogamer, went and confirmed it with their sources as well.
I can confirm it too.
Oh, okay, good. this information would actually line up with the Amazon Italy listing. This listing stated Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Remastered would cost around $25.
This happened while I was here, and I actually got a text from someone being like, hey, this is true.
Look at you, you're just living the life.
I'm not a Call of Duty fan, so I don't really care about any of this.
Yeah.
I've actually never played a Call of Duty game, believe it or not.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Never played, except not counting like a preview event. But
But you've, on your own for fun, you've never sat down and popped one in. Interesting.
Not once. Right, maybe one day.
Well, here, JBR is a fan. He writes in and says, of course, he wrote in kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Hey, Greg, and welcome, Jason. So new rumors are spreading that the Call of Duty World War II, or no, Modern Warfare 2 Remastered is single player only. That's obviously a problem for millions of fans, seeing as Call of Duty is mainly known for multiplayer. For me, it's bittersweet. I play Call of Duty for the campaign, even though I enjoyed the multiplayer as well. If it's just the campaigns, I'll still pick it up, but what about you guys in the audience? Would you buy it if it was single player only? Greetings from Florida. I would never buy, I don't, like Call of Duty, whatever, like in general, but like, why would I buy a remastered for multiplayer? And like, even like when people were super stoked about Halo, now granted, I just don't have a connection to Master Chief's collection, but like, it's like, really? Like, I feel like there's better multiplayer out there right now. Like, there's gotta be a universe you want to exist in.
Why wouldn't you play multiplayer on whatever's most recent?
It seems like it, though. I mean, I know how beloved Modern Warfare 2 is.
Right.
I would imagine that, yeah, it's gonna be a huge problem for people.
Maybe Black Ops 4 has a Battle Royale mode. I don't know this at all, but maybe they have a Battle Royale mode.
Yeah.
Maybe they want everyone playing that instead of Modern Warfare 2.
Probably, yeah. But it's just like a weird, like, we're going to get your money. Here's this thing we're going to put out that, you know, like, and just, we know you like the title, so here, you're going to get this.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, so Modern Warfare 2 was 360 PS3, correct?
Correct.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess if just people want to, I don't know.
Maybe. I don't think it'll make waves if it's just going to be single player. That's my initial read on it.
Yeah, Modern Warfare Remastered made waves because people love Modern Warfare. Maybe this. I mean, I don't know. All these Call of Duty games, they all like blend.
They all just
together
blend together, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fun thing about Call of Duty though is that I don't know if you noticed this, but Call of Duty Black Ops 4, which was just announced, is coming out on October 12th. This is the first time since 2004 that a Call of Duty game is coming out not in November. You know why?
Red Dead Redemption.
Exactly.
Everyone's terrified of Red Dead.
That's another GDC conversation is like, oh my God, nothing's going to be out around that week, Red Dead week.
Yeah.
Funny times.
Yeah. Funny times. Well, it's just like, that's what Rockstar can do. And that's what that brand of Red Dead can do.
Yeah. It's funny because nobody had any idea that Red Dead 1 was going to be the success it was. It was like, what? A Western? Western games don't sell. What? This is Red Dead Revolver sequel?
What is this?
And then, of course, it blew everybody's mind and like was one of the... I actually was replaying it with Kirk, my Kotaku Split Screen co-host. We were doing a stream on Sunday and replaying the 360 version on an Xbox One X. Xbox One of Red Dead 1, and it aged really well.
Yeah.
It holds up. It looks
I love
really
that
good.
Game. And I've thought Incredible about game. I've thought about doing it. I've thought about going back, and I'm like, you know, I'd rather just... I'm hungry just right now. Two. I'm just hungry. I'd rather get to 2 and have it.
Just need a PC version. That's what I want.
Nah, you don't need that at all. You can do your taxes on your PC, play your games on a console like a real person.
Spoken like someone who has not played games at 60 frames a second.
This is damn right. And I'm proud of it. Number 6, there's a Smash Brother Invitational coming. This is directly from Nintendo. On June 11th, 12th in Los Angeles, an invited group of players will gather to play Super Smash Brothers, and qualified teams will compete in Splatoon 2 as Nintendo hosts an event featuring high-level gameplay on these two games for the Nintendo Switch. This will be the first ever exhibition tournament featuring the recently announced Super Smash Brothers game coming to Nintendo Switch in 2018. Additionally, this will be the first world championship for Splatoon 2 after the game's launch. The gathering will be a celebration of fun for all ages and will be highlighting Nintendo's unique approach to competitive play. This event will be just one of the Nintendo activities at the E3 video game trade show, which runs June 12th and 14th at the Los Angeles Convention Center. Yay!
Yeah, good stuff. Man, yeah. I like Smash.
I love Smash. I can't wait
for
this.
The one thing that I'm bummed about here is that, so 2 years ago, Nintendo's E3 was all Zelda. Last year, it was pretty much all Mario.
Yeah.
I hope it's not all Smash, because I want them to have like a good, beefy, single-player game for the fall, but I don't think they will. I think it'll be mostly Smash and then like third-party stuff and smaller games. And Octopath Traveler, that's really all I need. I'm cool with that.
I'm just blessed that I get Mario Tennis Aces soon. You know what I mean? That's coming down the pipe.
You can't wait for that.
You're
one of those.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely one of those. Yeah, nice. I love the Mario Sports games.
Very cool.
It could have been Mario Golf, but it wasn't. But
yeah, I am curious to see if this is a brand new Smash or a reworking of the Wii U version. I think it'll be the latter, but we'll see.
Tim is out to lunch right now. Otherwise, he would have burst through the wall like the Kool-Aid man to tell you all his theories and stuff. I think he's now leaning that it's a full-blown new Smash based on what people are saying and the rumors he's hearing and his sources. He's getting text messages from Mr. Nintendo.
Okay.
I don't know. That's all over the place.
Mr. Nintendo himself.
Mr. Nintendo
John
himself.
John Nintendo, founder of Nintendo.
He's my friend's uncle. Yeah. All right, now what I'm going to do is do a really bad transition, and then you got to read this.
Okay.
Jason, I'm super excited for Smash Brothers, but it's still so far away. Nobody knows. Still far away. This year sometime, but far away. If I wanted to know what was coming to the digital mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Games Daily hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. I've missed you, Kevin. I'm glad you're back for the in stereo. Yeah. Love you.
Do I have to read these?
No, I got it from here.
Are these all real games?
Yeah, of course they are. It's fucking...
Okay.
It's Thursday, so if I don't say the platform, it's a Nintendo Switch game.
Okay.
Out today! Ark Park on PSVR and PC.
That's the Ark Survival Evolved game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we get into the... Here we go. Here comes the run of stuff for Switch. Eat Beat Dead Spike-san. Gekido Kintaro's Revenge. Manicore Galaxy on Fire. Moon Patrol. No Thing. Opus, Rocket of Whispers, Slay Away Camp, Butcher's Cut, that's a fun game, Soul Divide, Sword of Darkness, World Heroes 2 Jet, and then, if you're a Monster Hunter World fan like myself, Devil Leo is out today.
Another ongoing GDC conversation is the fact that indies are finding so much success on the Switch.
Yeah.
But looking at this list of games is making me wonder, and another thing people are talking about is like, when is it going to hit the oversaturation point, like Steam, where there are just too many games, too many indie games every week? Seeing this list of titles that I've never heard of makes me think that we're getting there very fast.
I've been blown away. I was talking about this yesterday, I think, with Phillips on the show. Every Thursday, there's like 12 to 18 games that come out on the Switch. And so I keep I'm with you where I'm like, well, this officially is ending the, it sold on Switch better than everything else combined. Uh-huh. But those stories still keep coming out.
They do.
So I wonder how much of it is the curation, sure, of like, oh, I'm going to go there. But also the fact that since everybody loves the Switch, every podcast is talking about like, well, this is what I'm playing on Switch. And I love this. And
very possible. I don't know. I'm very curious to see where we go with that.
I got a new date for you, too. You can play the Defiance 2050 beta April 20th through the 22nd on PlayStation 4. So if you were stoked for that,
very excited.
There you go. For deals of the day, Emmett Watkins Jr. wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, no question, just a major PSA for PSN deals. There are now two ways to get a 20% off code for use on the PlayStation Network store site. If you look in your inbox for an email titled your PSN name, here's your PlayStation Weekly update, you find a 20% off code. The other is acquired by visiting live.playstation.com. Once there, you'll see a few MLB The Show promotional videos that you can watch in exchange for DLC codes. The last trailer in the quest list will reward you with another 20% off. So there you go. Thanks, Emmett. Good looking out. Jason, it's time to jump into reader mail.
Okay.
But first, I got
to
do some ads so you can drink some water. We're brought to you today by Brooklinen and, of course, 4Hymns. Brooklinen, you spend a third of your life in your sheets. They should make them good sheets. Here's the thing about these Brooklinen sheets. Kevin, if I'm lying, I'm dying. They sent them to me. I got to pick my own. I got the white comforter, Kevin, with the blue polka dots, the blue sheets. Porty looks great in the photos I post with him in it. Instagram.com/GameOverGreggy. Jen was impressed that I was able to color match them myself. Kevin from kindoffunny.com, you have a question about Brooklinen sheets? Because you're doing that thing where you got a question.
I was just going to say, I've laid in there. I've been in your bed.
You have laid in my bed.
Yeah, it's very comfortable.
They're comfortable, yes? The sheets, yes. Especially.
Yeah.
Soft,
new. I went in there without a shirt. I was going to do that same picture that you had done.
Yeah.
But then I was like, nah, it's too much.
So you just fell asleep shirtless in my bed.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I didn't know that part, but I knew you'd been in the bed before. Brooklinen's great. Oh, no unnecessary markups and fees. Most betting is marked up as much as 300%. Brooklinen is the fastest growing betting brand of the world, and they don't do that. You can mix and match to complement any decor. This is luxury betting underpriced. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer for my listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code GAMESDAILY at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is use the promo code GAMESDAILY at Brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code GAMESDAILY. Here comes the best tagline of the business. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. It's bold. It's a bold claim, and I appreciate it. We're also brought to you by Hims. Did you know that 66% of men lose their hair by the age 35? And the thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep.
I did know that.
Yeah? Well, now I can hook you up with this code.
That's okay. No. I'm okay. Cool.
Just letting you know. You're just letting it go?
I'm fine.
Okay, fine.
I'll just shave it all off.
Oh, geez, Louise. Nick and Andy Cortez are using this. Of course, Hims gives you a whole bunch of different stuff. It's the one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and more for men. You go there. You send them photos if you're doing the hair loss stuff like Nick did. They give you a consult. They tell you what you need. If they need to actually give you like the doctor's prescription, full-blown stuff, they hook you up with a doctor there online. You can talk to them. 4Hims connects you with the real doctors. They're generic equivalents. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. These are prescription solutions backed by science. There's no waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Right now, my listeners can get a trial month of 4Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a pharmacy. Go to 4Hims.com/GamesDaily. That's FORHIMS.com/GamesDaily. 4Hims.com/GamesDaily. Now, Jason Schreier.
All right, we're back.
Where should we begin for you?
Any of these are all good questions.
I'm going to jump to Alex because this is one that I like to talk about a lot on this show. Alex writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, question for Jason from Kotaku. I first heard about Rocksteady possibly having a new Batman game from you months ago, and nothing has been talked about ever since then. I'm in need of some Rocksteady or Rocksteady WB Montreal Batman news. Do you have any? Please give us some kind of update on what either studio is doing with Batman or even DC characters. Thank you and keep up the good work, smiley emoticon.
Alex, you did not hear about Rocksteady possibly having a new Batman game for me, because I have not said that, because Rocksteady is not working on a new Batman game.
What are they working on?
I don't know. I've heard some rumors. I don't want to share them.
Sure. You haven't confirmed them. I understand. You got to vet them. You got to vet them.
I don't want to spread rumors that might not be true. So I will say what I have heard, what I've reported on Kotaku is last year or 2 years ago, I wrote that Warner Brothers Montreal, which has not shipped anything since Arkham Origins,
which was a long time ago,
2009. So they were working on a Suicide Squad game that was canceled, as I reported on Kotaku. They pivoted to a Batman game starring Damian Wayne. Since then, I have heard that that was either canceled or rebooted or in flux, and that they might still be working on a Batman game, but not featuring Damian Wayne. Don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure they're working on something involving Batman. Rocksteady doing who knows what, not Batman. Also, I get a bazillion DMs from fucking people who are just like, Rocksteady, tell me everything. Those people are insane. And side note, I'm playing Arkham Knight right now. Very, very good video game.
Yeah,
I will
really
say, Rocksteady, those guys know how to make games. So I'm excited for whatever they have.
When do you think we hear from them again? Is it this
E3? Yeah, I think so. I think it's time. Arkham Knight came out in 2015, so it feels like about time for them to reveal something for like 2019.
Yeah.
But that's just a guess. I don't have any inside info on when
they're that sounds about right. I feel like we're getting there. They keep being coy on their Twitter with their mocaps and their milestones, and they act like they're not teasing, but they're teasing.
Warner Brothers Montreal has been in a tough spot. They had a management shakeup a couple years back, so TBD what'll happen there. I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah, the rumors I've heard about the Montreal stuff seemed to go on forever. You know what I mean? Because I was talking to friends who had connections or this, that, or the other, and it was the same stuff you're talking about. I'd heard at one point they were trying to pivot it to a Justice League game, but that didn't happen. And then I heard about Damian Wayne stuff around the time you were reporting it. We'll see. As I've always said, Arkham Origins, criminally underrated.
Yeah.
It was totally like, oh, this game's, hey guys, it's a Batman game and it's not from Rocksteady. Everyone's like, we're going to fucking hate it regardless. We're going to pick it apart for the stupidest things.
To hate it. I will say that I think a lot of people were like, Damian Wayne, what? Like a lot of people didn't want a Damian Wayne game.
Yeah.
So I think they're if they do a new Batman game, I think it'll be more along the lines of what people actually want. So we'll see.
Lord of Pwn writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, hey, Greg and Jason. I just wanted to ask, is Kotaku still blacklisted by Bethesda? And why? And why do other outlets not seem to even care to ask about it? Also, maybe Greg could invite Pete Hines and Jason onto a future episode to talk about the whole thing. Hopefully, you have internet today. We do. Thank you. It was touch and go for a second. And Jason, keep killing it out there. Now I'm going back to waiting for Ni No Kuni 2, Lord of Pwn.
So, first of all, yes, we still are blacklisted by Bethesda.
What happened?
Second of all, if you invited Pete Hines and me onto an episode, I would be here with... like bells on. Pete would decline.
Okay.
Or he would just not show up. Try it and see what happens, but willing to bet that.
I vaguely remember this. You tweeted about it, right?
We've been talking. It's been nearly 5 years now.
Holy shit. I did not realize that.
So Bethesda has not said a word to us about this. So what their method is to just not respond to our emails, just never talk to us.
Okay.
One time we were like accidentally invited to a Bethesda event, and then the PR people involved had to like backtrack and be like,
the event got canceled. It was a joke.
Yeah. We don't have a spot for you anymore. Yes. So what happened was, very short version is, I published a bunch of different stories that were about things they didn't like. One of them was about Doom being in development hell back in 2013 when it was. One of them was about Arkane making a Prey game, which they denied. They said, oh no, Arkane's not making Prey. And look what happened. And so when they denied it, I published some emails from their studio head being like, hey, we're making a Prey game. And that's where the whole press sneak fuck came, because it was in one of those emails. It was like, now the press sneak fucks know about this. Anyway. And then the third thing was that someone sent me some scripts from Fallout 4. And so I published an article saying, hey, Fallout 4 is real. It's set in Boston, because that was when that whole fake The Survivor 2299 thing was going around. It was like this fake ARG that some fan had made in late 2013. Anyway, long story short, after that, they stopped talking to us. They never told us they were going to stop talking to us. They just stopped responding to our emails, stopped inviting us to things, stopped sending us press copies, whatever. The thing that bugs me most is, like, so I don't really care about review copies. Like, whatever, we'll run reviews late. We don't really care about that anyway. And like we can buy games, we can afford it. I do care about the fact that like when there's news, they won't even like do the courtesy of responding to us. So like if we need to report a story involving them, we know that they will never once write back to us. And we still do it because
We've reached out for a comment. You can put that in your story.
Yes, we do it because we are professionals and not babies. And so we will be professional as long as like if they wanted to come and talk to us, we would be fine with that. I think that a lot of publishers look at press outlets as their marketing arms. And if a press outlet doesn't want to be their marketing arm, then that publisher will do this kind of thing. And we've seen it happen a few times in the past.
That's the thing for me that catches me so off guard about it is that I remember stories like this for sure. I think it was, it might have even been Kotaku, right? Where it was Phil Harrison gave you guys a set of brass balls or something.
Yeah, this is before my time.
But yeah, that's my thing is like, this is shit I would hear about like in like, 2007, right? Or 2008 when that was happening.
Yep.
Where it was a very different video game industry landscape.
Yeah. And so the thing about the video game industry is like, so in film, something similar happened with Disney blacklisting an outlet for some reason or another. And all of the other film outlets like banded together and were like, we're not going to cover Disney unless they reverse its decision. In games, nobody really cares because the IGNs and GameSpots in the world are too reliant on that access to Bethesda, so they don't want to do anything that might risk pissing them off, I presume. I mean, it still does blow my mind that nobody has gotten Pete Hines or anyone from Bethesda on camera and said to them live in this kind of environment, what's the deal with Kotaku? Why are you blacklisting Kotaku?
Sure.
Because I would love to see his reaction.
Sure.
If he would just be like, can't comment on that and just not say anything. Or like I still haven't seen it. 5 years later, nobody has actually done that.
I'm not trying to be like, oh, I've never heard it. I remember you tweeting about it somewhat recently. Mm-hmm. And I remember that being the thing of like, oh, I hadn't even heard that story.
So we did an article about it in late 2015 is when we said it. Because Ubisoft had been blacklisting us also, but then they kind of reversed course and have warmed to us more recently, so we've been talking to them, and now I'm pretty good terms with them again.
Sure.
Bethesda is the one that just has cut off all ties.
I mean, next time I have them for anything, I'll ask.
Please do.
It's not like
I will tune in.
It's and I feel bad not knowing about it earlier, but it's I think the problem we have, and I think a lot of people do, is that I respect you and love you. You're easier. I respect and love you, and I read your articles. That's easy. But it's like when I have no idea what Brian and Max are doing with Up at Noon or Beyond because I don't have time to consume that, right?
Sure.
So if they bring up a story there, someone like Lord of Pwn brings it to me and reminds me about it because the fucking computer is broken for no reason, the fans fucked up, and the internet isn't... we all have to worry about so much in our own house that by the time you're like, oh, wait, this is happening.
I get it. There are a bunch of reasons why nobody has asked it. Like, I don't think it's just one specific reason.
Sure.
But it still does, like, alarm me or, like, it shocks me that nobody has once brought it up. It will be interesting to see. I would love to see you do it. And now that we've had this conversation, I bet you that Pete Hines is like, you know what? I'm not going to go on Kind of Funny anymore. I don't want to be asked that question.
He's been so good to us, though.
I hope he is not like that. And I hope he comes on and I hope you get the chance to ask him that question.
Yeah. I feel like I wish I'd known more because like this sucks because you obviously have a different relationship.
Yes.
Our relationship has always been Pete comes on, does the Gamescast, and is like super straight shooter. I'll ask him whatever and he'll give me a real answer and la, la, la. And like, I wish I would have known back then for
next time.
Yeah, well, fuck, when was he last through?
Make it happen.
Okay. Called him right after the big conference. No, we called him right before the big conference. He was getting ready to go on stage and we called him.
Nice.
If he doesn't answer those phone calls anymore, then we'll know.
Yeah, make it happen.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
How do you, or I guess, not even how do you deal, right? I feel like when, it doesn't happen much anymore, but even in the early days, it's kind of funny, but especially at IGN, when someone would leak something, they'd publish an email, they would do this different stuff, blah, blah, blah. There would be a push and pull from the audience of like, do you feel like you're crossing the line? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, this is entertainment. Mm-hmm. This is this, that, and blah, blah, blah. Where do you come down on that nowadays?
I have very, very complicated feelings. I've thought a lot about this conversation, and actually more recently, over the past couple of years, I've become less and less interested in stories that are just like, here's what you're going to find out about anyway in a couple of months or a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that scoop game is no longer that interesting to me. I feel like I got all of that out of my system already. That the idea of, because the stories that are most interesting to me are stories that I can do that nobody will find out about anyway. Stories about why Mass Effect Andromeda turned out the way it did, or why Visceral Games shut down. Stuff like that is way more interesting to me and way more valuable to readers than like the next Assassin's Creed will be wherever, which is not to say that like if someone emails me a giant list of screenshots of the next Assassin's Creed and is like, hey, look, it's in wherever, then I might feel obligated to post it because I might feel like I'm not doing my job if I'm not sharing that information with readers.
Yeah.
Because my job is to report news. So there is that kind of like, it's not a push and pull between us and readers or us and publishers. It's more of a push and pull between us and ourselves being like, okay, how much energy do I want to put into chasing after this scoop versus something that is more valuable to people? So for example, with Assassin's Creed, people have told me where the next Assassin's Creed is, but I'm not like hurrying up right now to chase after that particular story because I don't think it's super valuable to people that to know, like if there was some sort of news value attached, like if someone told me, hey, you should know that the next Assassin's Creed is coming out in 2019 or whatever, because it's they're going back to every other year,
yeah.
Then that might be a more compelling story to me.
Sure.
But just like, here's information about this game that you're going to find out anyway is not super interesting to me. The question is always, what's the news value here? And mm-hmm. that's something we always are talking about internally. Does the news value justify reporting on this information, or is reporting on this information just like spoiling someone's big announcement? And that's always a tough question. Like, I don't know the answer. I don't think there's any one right or wrong answer there. But yeah, we have those types of conversations every time someone tells us something.
Yeah.
And every time we get a leak of something, it's a big thing to think about.
Sure. Yeah. And that's the thing is like, I really don't envy, I appreciate the work you do, but I don't envy the position you're put in. You know what I mean? Cause like,
I don't mind.
No. Oh, yeah.
I like the job.
Sure. No. It's just, I remember like, a similar track of like when I was a journalist, right, after journalism school. And then even coming to IGN where it was, I was writing new stories and not on the level you are, but it was like something's leaked or we heard this, blah, blah, blah. But the job does become a lot of off the record information and knowing stuff in advance and mm-hmm. not saying, and also not being weird and teasing it. And like,
right.
And when is the right time to say something? When is the right time of what news actually is?
Yeah. I mean, the problem with like hiding information and not sharing information is then you begin to feel like a marketer and you begin to feel like you are part of the machine rather than an independent reporter who's doing his or her job. So it is that kind of tough balance and thinking about things. And yeah, I mean, I've heard stories like, so back in the day when Ubisoft was about to announce For Honor, it was codenamed Hero, and I had heard all about, like, someone, Ubisoft is super leaky. People just come and tell me things.
Well, there's like 3,000 people working.
Way more. It's like 8,000. So I think that, so someone had come to me and been like, For Honor is, or this game Hero is blah, 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 blah. I'll hear all these details.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I mean, there's no news value to this. We're going to find out about it in a couple weeks at E3.
Yeah.
Like, why would I share that this game has samurai and Vikings or whatever? So I just sat on it and was like, whatever, we'll wait for the reveal. And then I was talking about this with a developer on the For Honor team later. And he was like, yeah, having that reveal unspoiled was like one of the best moments of our lives.
Yeah.
We were so happy. It didn't leak out. We were just so thrilled that everybody got to see it. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that makes me feel like shit when I do have to report on something that is like spoiling an announcement. So it is that kind of interesting push and pull and trying to empathize with people while also realizing that you're not a marketer and it's not your job to be like
to protect
supporting
this.
Developers' feelings or whatever. So there's a lot of nuance there.
100%.
There are no easy answers to any of these questions.
Okay. You did a good job answering them all the same.
Yeah, man. Because we think about this a lot. We talk about this a lot. People send us a lot of shit, and sometimes we share it, sometimes we don't. It really depends.
Kevin from Riverside, California, not Kevin from Daily City, don't worry, writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, after the debates that occurred surrounding Game of the Year 2017 and PUBG, do you foresee a possible future where Fortnite could win Game of the Year 2018? Traditional outlets openly discussed whether or not an early access game could be nominated for Game of the Year or even win. Now we are seeing a game that has both evolved significantly and gathered an enormous new player base, although it has been playable in some form or another for years. I'm not saying Fortnite will win Game of the Year 2018. It is far too early to say that. But could games like Rainbow Six Siege, Overwatch, Rocket League, or GTA 5 for that matter, be contenders in this potential new format and new mindset that the press is forming around what we know as Game of the Year?
Kevin, you seem like a good guy, and I'm sorry that I'm about to offend you, there is literally nothing less interesting to me than talking about Game of the Year and what it means and what it can be. Like, seeing all the headlines about, like, can PUBG be game of the year? It just made me want to blow my brains out. It was just like, that is just so uninteresting a question. And at Kotaku, we don't even do game of the year anymore. We do, here are the 12 best games of the year, and we just pick our 12 favorites.
Sure.
And we have some interesting debates and stuff, but like the idea of game of the year, I think, is obsolete for this reason and for many other reasons. Like, it's easy to say, yes, Zelda was the best game that came out last year.
Oh, Mario, but yeah.
Okay, sure. It's easy to have that debate, but I just find that very uninteresting. I just don't enjoy that.
What I like about it is I'm with you. Like, at IGN, I hated top 25 lists, like going into a room and arguing about it. Game of the Year stuff is fun for a second of like, hey, it was a great year. Let's look back.
Yeah.
But eventually, even on our shows where we're like, all right, we're arguing about it, I'm like, oh, fine, Zelda wins, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But I like the question in the thought of games press, enthusiast press, whatever you want to call it, right, has been doing this so long, and now the fact that to continue to speak to the audience is no longer necessarily, hey, here was the hottest shit of this year, and it means that it came out this calendar year. Mm-hmm. It could easily be the GTA line. It could be Fortnite. It could be
I mean,
things.
I think that's just another wrinkle to the question of whether Game of the Year is obsolete as a term, and I think it totally is, because as soon as I mean, going as far back as like the invention of mobile games, once you have mobile games in the question, and this is just like an entirely different platform, an entirely different world, how can you possibly compare like this, like Threes, which is my favorite game on mobile and probably one of my favorite games of all time, to like that came out in 2014, I think. How do you compare that to Dragon Age Inquisition or like Shadow of Mordor? Like, how do you make those comparisons and say one is game of the year over another? One is this addictive little puzzle game for your phone that you play in the subway all the time, and one is this like big budget console RPG or whatever. So this just adds another genre to that equation, and again, it adds even more credence to the idea that game of the year as a concept is just stupid. It's just dumb. I like the idea of celebrating all the games of the year and saying these are the best. Like, I always enjoy doing, we all do at Kotaku, we all do our author top 10 lists of the year, and I always love that because I'm going to go through and talk about my favorite stuff.
I get to pop up on Giant Bomb and I like that too, right? And I'm like, these are my favorite games, because I still have that weird IGN editorial mentality. I'm like, these are my favorite games, which doesn't mean I think they're the best.
Right.
These are the games that I've enjoyed the most.
You gotta say that or else you get some angry comments.
Oh, you're gonna get angry comments no matter what.
But that allows you to celebrate everything instead of just being like, all right, what's the big budget console game that everyone's gonna love the most this year?
Last year it
was Zelda, but like there was also plenty of other awesome stuff that just drawing a comparison is just impossible to do. How do you say that like I really enjoyed Thimbleweed Park, which was a point and click adventure game last
Ron Gilbert.
Year. Yeah, it was a great game, and that trying to compare that, this $4 million Kickstarter game, to or $2 million, whatever it was, to Zelda, like 5 years in development with a staff of hundreds at Nintendo, like for a brand new console, it's just like a different world. And man, fuck Game of the Year.
Game of the Year. Yeah, just
up,
like the Oscars.
Yeah.
Jason Schreier, you're a fascinating man, and I like you quite a bit.
Yeah, let's do this again sometime.
Agreed. Come, move away from New York.
Do we have
here.
To get through the rest of these questions? Or
no, we're done with questions. Okay. What I do need to tell you, Kevin, is I'm about to squat up, but what I need from you, Kevin Coelho from Daily City, is to go get my computer, because I think we're still doing your... cool, Greg. Will you grab my computer off my desk and bring it here? I need it for your wrong. But now, it's time to squat up. This is where one of you writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Give me your name, username, platform of choice, and why you need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find you. Everybody plays video games together because you're an amazing community. Today, Kelly needs help. For the throwback, I'll do, it's Kelly! Kelly needs help on Switch. Her Switch code, goddamn you, Nintendo, is SW44142057832 6.
Unbelievable.
Kelly writes in and says, I love Splatoon 2, but have been nervous about trying ranked battles. Any best friends out there want to show me their Squid Kid skills? My Switch ID, I'm not saying it again. And also, my Twitter is Kelly Lane, Kelly with an I, 11. Kelly Lane, 11. Looking forward to inking up the turf with all of you. Thank you guys and gals for all you do. I've been a proud Patreon supporter since day one. Smiley emoticon, Kelly. Thank you for your support, Kelly.
Nice.
Everyone, go support Kelly in her quest to be the best ink kid out there.
How many people are actually going to go in and type in that friggin' friend code?
A lot.
That's the question.
You know what I mean?
It takes so much time.
Andy Cortez probably will. He's crazy about it. Now, what happened, according to Joey Noel, what I got told the other day was This is a while back, too. Okay. But the You're Wrong URL was directing to the forums, but the forums were now like not working correctly and giving off this weird thing. So, we moved it over to this, whatchamacallit, response site Google form. So now I get to look through this and see. Here we go. Okay, here we go. So we have four You're Wrongs today. Remember, if you're watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, you need to write in to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe. Oh, here, somebody's already... I don't like how this looks at all, Jason.
Oh, no.
This is a brand new system I'm using, and I'm not appreciative of it.
Are they live correcting us? Did we say anything wrong already?
Well, Greg and Jason both said Ubisoft had 3,000 and 8,000 employees respectively. Ubisoft worldwide has nearly 12,000 employees.
That makes more sense.
All of which will be DMing Jason after the show about the release date of the next Assassin's Creed entry. No, we're not doing that one. Devil A-Hole. You know,
they have like... It might be 8,000 in Montreal alone. These numbers are just coming off the top of my head.
Right.
They have some number that because of their tax credits in Montreal, they have to hit a certain quota of employees. And so it's a crazy number of jobs they have there. It's wild.
Well, Ubisoft's just getting bigger and bigger by the day.
They just announced that they're opening like two more studios just today.
Good Lord. Devalejo came out earlier this week. I know because I took him down last night. Sorry, I can't read your names. It just doesn't show them here. I have to get it into a spreadsheet and a Google Doc. It's a whole rigmarole, but I'll get there. Don't worry. I'll get there.
What else did we fuck up?
Sometimes people just editorialize, but so it's like, I don't know. Last main series Call of Duty to release in October is Call of Duty 2, October 25th, 2005.
That's what I said.
I figured, yeah, that's the thing.
That's definitely what I said. And maybe I said 2004.
And then the final one is, hello, Greg and Jason. Yesterday, the pronunciation of Brigitte in Overwatch is roughly Brigitta. This is a Swedish character.
I said Bridget.
No. Yeah, I screwed it. Yesterday I said it, but You're Wrong was down. So
no,
we
I mean just in person. Not here, but I said it before as just Bridget.
Well, now you know it's Brigitta.
That's how I read it out loud.
She is a Swedish character who is the daughter of Torbjorn. And helps Reinhardt with his arm. Man, you guys are fucking dorks. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday on a variety of platforms. We run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, hit up patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Kick us a few bucks. Watch us record it live on Twitch. Watch it later on YouTube. Enjoy it as a podcast, including Spotify. Tomorrow, Easy Allies Daniel Bloodworth will join me for this show. This has been Jason Schreier from Kotaku.
Hello, Greg. Thank you so much.
Anything you want to pimp? The book, of course.
Yeah, the book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. You can get it anywhere. Your local bookstore. Support local bookstores. Working on another book, but won't talk about it yet. Maybe next year.
Okay.
Same time.
Sure,
same
channel. Every GDC you come through, you're like
and
Santa.
What else? Kotaku Split Screen. Find us on your local podcast provider. Kotaku.com. I'm on Twitter, Jason Schreier, whatever the fuck. Man, Twitter is weird. That's it. That's all I got. Kotaku.com. Okay. Check it out. We have articles about snacks.
Yeah, you do. Snack Taku. Every time it happens, somebody's like, oh, man, and they do an Oreo. They're ripping you off. I'm like, they were doing this a long time, I think, before I was. Don't worry about it.
Snack
Taku. Not to mention, you can all review Oreos. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, Oreos are great.
Jason, you've been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Greg. I will come back another time.
Yes. Until next time. Of course. You're always welcome here.
Excellent.
One day with Pete Hines. Until next time. It's been our pleasure to serve you.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.